Christopher.
Yes, Shayna.
Did you know that God was a baseball fan?
I'm not surprised.
Yeah, somebody pointed it out to me the other day. First line of scripture, there it is. In the beginning. Just saying.
How many runs did they score in that beginning?
Seven, I believe. Seven times around the bases, yes. Or six, and on the seventh they rested. I don't know. You'd have to be an interpretation, but I never saw it that way, you know.
Welcome to What in God's Name. She is Shayna Appel.
And he's Chris Owen.
We are doing current events and culture. We are on a mission to do current events and culture using the lenses of theology and philosophy so as to tell deeper stories about who we are and where we're going, deeper stories than the ones we usually hear in the mainstream media about politics and economics.
And it wouldn't be an untoward byproduct if listeners of our show also began thinking about current events through the lenses of theology, philosophy, psychology, something other than the binaries of politics and economics, because nowhere in that conversation of economics and politics does human flourishing dwell. To get to human flourishing, you got to get beyond the binary.
We are pushing back against programmatic secularists in our culture who say religion in the public square, no. Keep your religion private. To them, we say, no, there are lots of riches. There are tons of riches. There are veins of riches to be mined in our religious plurality and even beyond religion into moral conversations. We need those as part of the public square. And on the other hand, we push back against the quasi-theocrats who are more than happy to have religion in the public square so long as it's theirs. And to them, we also say, no, in this amazing and beautiful plurality that makes up the United States, we need, indeed, we are obligated to hear diverse perspectives.
Christopher, what makes them quasi-theocrats?
Yeah, we might just say theocrats.
But I love like the quasi-theocrat has a musical lilt to it.
I think a straightforward theocrat would be the Ayatollahs of Iran, you know, where it's very baldly stated that Islamic jurisprudence will be the law of the land. There's nobody in the United States that I know of that is saying Roman Catholic canon law should be the law of the land.
Well, we should have this conversation for a show sometime, because I think there are theocrats out there who are, in fact, absolutely cocksure that the way they see and, you know, pick of it, that homosexuality is an abomination unto the Lord. There are people who are convinced that abortion is an abomination unto the Lord. There are people who are convinced that divorce is an abomination unto the Lord. And they are absolutely cocksure that it is their way and only their way. And what makes it so difficult to even try to converse with them is because there's no flexibility. There's no capacity to think outside of the box they're in. So theocrats, quasi-theocrats, doesn't matter. We're pushing back against them and saying it ain't going to be your religion and your religion only in the public square because of what Chris said. Our pluralistic society is enriched by many voices.
We ask each other. Shayna asks me. I ask her to think hard and deep about things, to feel also hard and deep about things. We ask you to do the same. And so it's a serious show, and we try to inject levity here and there because levity is spiritual and part of healthy, whole human living and flourishing. So we have funny little things that we like to do, like spin our spinny wheel. It has 16 different core values and key ideas. We give it a spin. The sprinkler head that is a pointer lands on one, and we do a little riff on that particular concept. And it's, among other things, one way to welcome new listeners who might be finding What in God's Name. It's a way for us to welcome you and to let you know a little bit more about what drives our show. I think it's my spin.
I believe it is your spin. Ooh, Chris. It landed on Chris. That means Chris has to tell us a little something about himself.
The spinning wheel landed on Chris. That is me. Briefly, I did not grow up in any real formal religion, kind of culturally Christian, and came to something really astounding when I went to college, which is I met intelligent Christians, and I didn't know such a thing existed. And that changed the trajectory of my life. I didn't become a Christian right away, but it became a possibility. Like, I met people of faith who reconciled a deep and abiding faith with intellectual honesty. And that's a core of who I am and what I bring to this show.
Yeah, me too. That was my experience at Andover Newton, meeting deep thinking Christians who were, you know, had intellectual integrity. Here was a faith that wasn't asking me to keep my head at the, you know, check my head at the door, but, you know, bring it in with me. So, yeah.
You know, I'm really glad you added that, but I have to point out that the pointer landed on me, not you.
Sorry. Enough about me. Should be all about Christopher. And today's show, we are looking at gun violence and in America. And at the beginning of the show, Christopher reminded me that in a previous show that we did back in 2019 about gun violence, I actually referred to gun violence as a pandemic. Christopher then tried to, you know, hang the whole freaking COVID-19 pandemic around my neck, you know, as if I brought it on with the word. And I was like, wow, if I were that powerful, I would be getting paid a whole lot better than I am. So that's not true. I get paid just fine. But the point is, I'm not that powerful.
So the recent shooting in San Jose, Governor Gavin Newsom responded with a quote, "What the hell is wrong with us?" Meaning the United States. What the hell is wrong with us that these mass shootings and mass murders keep on happening? And Shayna, I just wanted to start by wondering with you, that is a question. Is it the question? What other questions might we ask beyond that? Or how might we want to respond to Gavin Newsom? I mean, it's a question that in a way is an expression of exasperation.
Yeah. I mean, my knee-jerk snarky reaction to that question is, who we, white man? I mean, you know, yes, gun violence is off the charts in America, and 98% of it is carried out by men. The vast majority of mass shootings are carried out by young white men. And so, you know, when I hear the governor of California say, "What is wrong with us?" there's a part of me that wants to step back and say, "Hang on there a second, good buddy." And by the way, what is wrong with men in this country, and where the hell are all the good ones?
That's a great and interesting response.
Anyway, where did you go with that question?
So,
because, you know, the spinny wheel landed on you. So,
in preparation for this show, Shayna, I was asking myself, as I do for every show, what is the deeper story here? What is the deeper story that we want to tell and that we might want to try to tell? And one story that I think the gun violence in our country reveals is a story of psycho-spiritual, and I can't think of quite the right word, but crisis might be, or psycho-spiritual break. And I think you're pointing out that this tends to be a white male problem. Again, I search for the
psychosocial depravity.
Yeah, yeah. So when I think of the psycho-spiritual part of this story, I think of not just mass shootings, but all gun violence, so much of which is suicide. So that's the other piece of this. We have violence that is violence that points outward in these mass shootings that get a lot of press and a lot of attention, but more than 60% of gun deaths in the United States are suicide. So that violence turned inward.
Well, and that's one that impacted my family. I mean, that's one that's impacted me personally because my brother took his life and he did it with a gun. So there is the self-inflicted. To me, it feels like they have to be approached very differently. I mean, unless you want to just stay at the bottom, the, you know, the sort of the entry level, which is, well, there's too many freaking guns out there. And I guess during the pandemic, word is that gun sales went completely off the charts. So we had too many guns before the pandemic. We've got way too many now. So that's one issue. And the reason I think you need to separate it is because, or maybe you don't, and maybe this is going to be one of those shows where we think our way back to a common point. But, you know, I mean, one thing obviously is violence turned inward, violence turned outward. The violence turned inward, the, you know, committing suicide with a gun is theoretically quick, and I don't know if it hurts. But it has a very, particularly for people who shoot themselves in the head, which my brother did not. But for people who like blow their brains out, literally, that is, it screams F you to me. It screams F you, F the world, F it all. And I do think that there's an element of that in these mass shootings where something has gone so haywire that there's this gut reaction that explodes all over, you know, that all over everybody else. But I also want to say that in light of the fact that men are responsible for like 98% of gun violence in America, that I think we can't talk about this without talking about male privilege, male entitlement. What is it that men think they are entitled to? Because, you know, we see violence in the workplace, right, which has to do with, you know, somebody not getting what they thought they should from their job, or they got fired and that was unjust. And most of the violence, or much of the violence in schools, is either a consequence of men being bullied, young boys being bullied, or being turned away by some woman who, you know, a young girl who, you know, doesn't theoretically have the right to say no. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, I'm just playing at that edge of what gets so tromped on in the male soul in that moment that this looks like a proper response?
That's a great question. That takes us deeper into the story. And so in my mind, I'm going, should we walk down this path and tell the story? I mean, I have a response to that. I have a theory about, so yeah, we'll walk down that, because I do have a theory about that. I think I read the kind of violence that we're talking about as connected to shame.
Yeah, shame. Shame.
So connected. So then connected also, shame is connected to status, worth. I mean, this gets at, again, economic measure, like our culture measures worth by economic success. We have very few ways of telling the story of human worth apart from what your income is. So,
well, women have a different story. Women have a different story. Women can procreate. Their worth may be, you know, in the children that they bring forth or in the care that they provide, you know, for families. But I think for men, the worth is absolutely and very unhealthily bound to both politics and economics, which is the place where we say, look, we're trying to get beyond those binaries to a place of human flourishing. But if you cannot get beyond those and you cannot compete on either of those courts, if you're a male, and particularly if you're a white male, you're SOL.
Yeah. So there's a lot about power there. power and powerlessness. I mean, when you have a gun, you are automatically powerful. And if you walk around in life feeling worthless and powerless, it's a quick fix.
Well, and yes, and we know that among suicide victims, among those who have attempted suicide and survived, what we hear most often is that the attempt to suicide was not so much a rush to death as it was trying to make the pain stop. So, you know, there again, do women have a higher threshold to pain? It has been argued that they do. And if that men actually had to give birth to children, the human race would have been wiped out, you know, tens of millennia ago, hundreds of millennia ago. But I think there's also like an expectation. Women in our culture are allowed to have, you know, psycho-spiritual pain, and the nature of their relationships is such that, and of course I'm being very generalized here just for, you know, conversation's sake, but, you know, the nature of our relationships is that we are freer to talk about it. Whereas I think men from a very young age, you know, are told to suck it up, cupcake, you know, be a man. Don't you cry. Don't you hurt. You know, you go out there and you take what is yours, and you know, it's toxic. It's toxic masculinity at its worst. And, you know, my question, the question I asked you, you know, before we started the show is where the hell are the good men? You know, I think I know, you know, hundreds of them, you know, men who I have served in my congregations, men who I serve as chaplain, you know, guys who are on my fire departments, colleagues. I know a lot of great white men, but I feel like the thing that's missing is the capacity to organize in that grassroots way. That, by the way, is a generational thing, because I think the current Gen Z is actually not only capable of grassroots organizing, but they're engaged at it from a very young age. I mean, they've done some tremendous political work thus far, and it may be that they will figure out how to organize. But I think it's men have to talk to other men, and particularly older men talking to young boys and saying, this is a hot mess. You got sold a bill of goods. You go down this road, your life is going to suck. You're going to be miserable. And if it doesn't work out, you may get so pissed one day that you pick up a gun and waste a whole bunch of people or yourself.
I appreciate how you've connected the story of gun violence to the story of, I'll use the word crisis, the crisis of masculinity in our culture. I think that is right on, and I was not thinking that before we started this conversation.
Well, you wouldn't,
this morning,
because, you know, you're...
Because I'm swimming in the I'm swimming in the water
swimming
of manhood.
In what is, but I mean, you know, you're an awesome guy. I mean, how has toxic masculinity affected you? How has it? And not only are you an awesome guy, but you and your wife have raised an awesome son. And what have been some of the challenges there?
Boy, what a question! I guess the spinny wheel did land on me. The brief answer to that question is I spent a lot of money on psychotherapy. The longer answer is that it's about, to my mind, integration. I'm thinking yin and yang and the masculine and the feminine inside myself, and being more and more comfortable as I've grown and matured with the feminine side of me. And which is very threatening in the toxic masculinity culture to even talk about having a feminine side. I mean, this is Jungian psychology as well. So that's a bit of the longer answer. It's and that's just tremendously hard work that a person cannot do on their own. And again, that's part of the problem of the toxic masculinity, is that we all feel like we, as men, need to figure it out alone. And there's
some Christian
goodness to that too.
As Christian men, you know, there is, you know, the Jesus of Scripture, who is not toxically male, not in any sense of the word. We've got images of Jesus feeding people. We've got images of Jesus washing the feet of his disciples. We have Jesus coming up against this radically oppressive force and doing a, you know, a kind of like an ontological Aikido, you know, where he just says, hey, look, just get out of the way. Just give God what's due God. I mean, give to Caesar what's due Caesar and give to God what's due God. So the people really wanted a military. They wanted a toxic male person to come in there and wipe out Rome. And instead, you know, we got Jesus. And then Jesus in our culture gets weaponized in ways that are, you know, heartbreaking. But, you know, Trump is my president and Jesus is my savior. God, I don't know how those two things coexist. But there you have it. But before Jesus is weaponized, there is a person of Jesus who I think, like, should be enough. Should be, like, model yourselves on him. And I think it's part of toxic masculinity is that, you know, people are, men are encouraged to go it alone. I mean, I know that my, you know, I know that my brother could have found somebody to talk to about the things that were troubling him. I know that there were 1,000 options to the one he chose, but he was never going to find him and he was never going to have those conversations. Just not his generation. It's not what they did.
So you identify a culture surrounding your brother that, not the cause of him not pursuing other ways, but certainly a factor in his not pursuing other ways.
No, I think in thinking about my brother's life, that he was absolutely inculcated into a way of being, and I'm not saying that he wasn't responsible. He bought into it. And there were ways in which he played along and, you know, benefited from all of that, which, you know, the eldest male in a family and a white male and an affluent white male, you know, he had all of that available to him, but it didn't stop the pain. And, you know, you were talking about that psycho-spiritual crisis. It's almost a disconnect from the psychospirit. Like, it's almost like something gets cut off there. Because, man, how do you walk into a school and shoot a bunch of kindergartners? Like, what level of depravity, how unhinged do you have to be? Or you're pissed at somebody in your workplace and maybe you know, you're pissed at the boss, but you don't go in and just shoot the boss. You go in there and spray the entire damn floor. What has to not be there, right, is that sense that life is sacred, that these are human beings, that people are connected and have families and people who love them, and it will matter that those people aren't there. I can't help but feel on some level that the people who are doing the shooting themselves don't feel like they matter, that it doesn't, you know, that they have no worth anymore. And if, and then you really, then you're really in trouble.
Yeah.
Because we have a lot of people walking around right now who don't feel that their lives matter.
Right. And I think it's important as we tell this story to resist the temptation to pathologize those people as being sick and the rest of us are all okay. I think that's a false lens on our society. I prefer, and I think it's more accurate to tell the story systemically, which is they are, those people who do these acts of violence are representative of us.
Oh, absolutely.
They are the picture of our sickness.
Oh, yeah. After Matthew Shepard was murdered, there was a play that was created that tells the Matthew Shepard story, but tells it from the perspective of the people who knew the young men who did this horrific thing. And they were their neighbors and their friends. And it would be far easier if we could say, there is a planet down here somewhere that floats around, you know, in planet Earth from which these beings come, and they're really not really... But I think, I mean, it absolutely is. You know, we, It's much easier to point a finger.
We'll need to leave it there. Be curious, Shana.
Go deep, Chris.
And shine light. Our show today is brought to you by our generous donors on Patreon. We invite you to support What in God's Name and the What in God's Name mission by joining our generous donors on Patreon. You can find us on Facebook at What in God's. You can sign up for our newsletter and receiving our show via email on our website, whatingods.com, which is Shana,
WHATINGODS.
Great to be with you today.
Awesome to be with you, Christopher.